Thank you so much for coming today. Really excited to see such a good crowd and the folks in it. I'm Kevin Hales. I'm an attorney for Cisco Systems and RTP, and I'm head of the Triangle Lawyers Chapter of the Federalist Society. The Federalist Society is an organization of over 40,000 lawyers, law students, and other individuals who believe and trust that individual citizens can make the best choices for themselves and society. The Triangle Lawyers Chapter is one of many local chapters that seek to foster a serious dialogue about issues of individual liberty. Today, we are delighted to have John Allison, executive in residence at the Wake Forest School of Business. He is a member currently of the Cato Institute's Board of Directors, and he is chairman of the Executive Advisory Council of the Cato Institute's Center for Monetary and Financial Alternatives. Mr. Allison was previously president and CEO of the Cato Institute, and prior to joining Cato, as many of you know, he was chairman and CEO of BB&T Corporation. During his tenure as CEO, BB&T grew from $4.5 billion to $152 billion in assets. He was recognized by the Harvard Business Review as one of the top 100 most successful CEOs in the world over the last decade. Mr. Allison is the author of two excellent books with long, compelling titles. One is The Financial Crisis and the Free Market Cure, Why Pure Capitalism is the World Economy's Only Hope, and The Leadership Crisis and the Free Market Cure, Why the Future of Business Depends on the Return to Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Happiness. And make sure you pick up your copy. The books there on the table at the front are free. So on your way out, grab a copy. They are free for the taking. Yep. And we got a bunch. If they run out, I've got boxes. Also, grab yourself some dessert. You know, last time we had a lot of dessert left over, so don't want to see that again. Mr. Allison is also a graduate of UNC Chapel Hill here. I won't hold that against him, I'm an NC State guy. I'm a UNC guy for law school, but that doesn't count. He received his master's degree in management from Duke University, and he's also a graduate of the Stonier Graduate School of Banking. Please join me in providing a warm welcome to Mr. John Allison.
Thanks, Kevin, and good day. It's really a pleasure to be here. I always enjoy talking to Federalist Society groups. It's very hopeful to see lawyers that want to defend individual rights. That's very important. My topic on my presentation today is a philosophical fight for the future of America. I think that this fight is having a profound influence on the quality of your lives and the quality of your lives and your children's lives. I don't think we're fighting about the superficial stuff you hear in the press. We're fighting over very fundamental principles. Before I get into my presentation, I just want to give you a little elevator speech on Cato. I know some of you are familiar with Cato, but let me give you my elevator speech because it gives you a little context. Cato is the world's leading libertarian think tank. Cato's mission is to create a free and prosperous society based on the principles of individual liberty, free markets, limited government, and peace. We really do believe in limited government. We think the government ought to stay out of your pocketbook, but we also think it ought to stay out of your bedroom. We think government has a very important but very limited role. The purpose of government is to protect individual rights, it's to keep me from using force of fraud to take what you've earned, and to keep you from using force of fraud to take what I've earned. So the government is in the business of protecting individual rights. In that context, we think the government has three legitimate roles. One is national defense to protect us from bad guys overseas. Secondly is police to protect us from bad guys in our neighborhood. And finally is an effective court system so that when you and I have a legitimate dispute, we can settle it without resort to violence. In our ideal world, there'd be 95% less regulations and far more effective courts than we have today. The reason we think government power needs to be limited is government has a unique and very dangerous authority. It has the authority to initiate the use of force. Government has guns. Walmart can beg you to buy their products. They can offer you special deals, but they can't make you. The government can make you. They can take your property. They can put you in jail. They can kill you. In fact, governments have killed hundreds of millions of people throughout history. Governments are very dangerous. In addition, commonsensically, relationships that are voluntary are better than relationships based on force. And government is about the use of force. It's about people with guns making people do things that they don't want to do. So anytime you support new legislation, ask yourself, would you take a gun and make somebody do that? Because that's what happens when a law gets passed. All right, in that context, let me talk about this philosophic fight for the future of America. On one side are those of us in what I call the classical liberal tradition. The defenders of the principles that we think made America great, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And I'll talk about our side in a minute. On the other side are the statists of all kinds. Statists are people that believe fundamentally government has the solution to the problems. There are plenty of right-wing statists. Most right-wing statists are more interested in controlling your personal life. Left-wing statists tend to be more interested in your controlling your money, although now they've gotten very interested in your personal lives. The most visible form of statism today is the so-called progressive, the radical left movement. It's an old movement, goes back over 100 years, but it's become far more powerful in recent times, even though it failed years ago. Progressives deeply believe that a group of elitists in Washington, D.C. know what's better for you. They know how to make your life better. And they always are going to act in the common good. They're going to always do what's good for the common good. Underlying the progressive movement are three fundamental philosophical principles: altruism, collectivism, and egalitarianism. Altruism is not benevolence. Benevolence is a really good thing. Altruism is otherism. It says everybody's important but you. Everybody's important but you. The problem with that is there are only but yous. There's you, 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 you. And if none of the yous matter, individuals aren't important. What is important in the measure of performance is the so-called collective, the good of the group. And individuals are irrelevant. And that leads to collectivism. And collectivists always argue that they are acting in the so-called common good. Here's a problem with that. The common good as presented by modern progressives is really an oxymoron. When the Founding Fathers got through with the common good, freedom of speech, freedom of religion, through the Declaration of Independence, and the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, they pretty much defined all the real common goods. Today, what we're really talking about when somebody says the common good is good for me, not so good for you. Good for you, not so good for me. Good for my group, not so good for your group. Good for the taxi drivers, not good for Uber. Good for the teachers, maybe not so good for the students. Good for General Electric, not necessarily good for General Electric's competitors. And so what you have going on in Washington, D.C. today is group warfare. Everybody, quote, representing the common good. And by the way, if something were really equally good for all of us, would we be arguing about it? We wouldn't. So common good as presented by progressives is really an oxymoron. Underlying the progressives movement, and this is really critical in terms of what people think politically, is their sense of justice. Your sense of justice largely drives where you are on the political spectrum. And the progressive sense of justice is what I call radical egalitarianism. Now, to some degree, the United States is an egalitarian society. All men were created equal. But when the founders of the United States were talking about all men being created equal, they were talking about equal for the law. Just because you were the son of a baron didn't give you any special rights. The progressive concept of egalitarianism is equal outcome. Now, while it's true that everybody ought to be equal for the law, and it's true that every human being ought to be treated with dignity and respect, it is not true that everybody is equal. Every person in this room is a unique, special individual. We all have different strengths, different weaknesses, different abilities, different goals, different objectives. That's great. That's what makes human nature so interesting. We're all unique, special individuals. But we're not equal. At the extreme, Thomas Edison and the Boston Strangler are not equal. They're not equal. The only way to get equal outcomes from unequal people is to use force to take what one person has earned and give it to somebody that's not earned it. So progressives are in the business of using force to take what one person has earned, it can be money, but it can be lots of other stuff, and give it to people that haven't earned it. Let me concretize that for you. I'll tell you a story, tell you a little bit about how old I am, where I went to school. One of my heroes was Michael Jordan. I thought Michael Jordan was a really great basketball player, but a real inspiration for poor kids. This will surprise you. I am not as good a basketball player as Michael Jordan. There's a serious differential in performance. What's interesting, however, is that I can't be as good a basketball player as Michael Jordan. I don't care how hard I tried, how hard you tried to help me, I cannot be as good a basketball player as Michael Jordan. You cannot make the average great. You can make the average better. That may be a very productive, very noble thing to do, but you can't make the average great. However, you can make the great average. Progressives, by definition, in their egalitarian focus, are in the business of making the great average. It's very easy to make Michael Jordan as good a basketball player as me. You just cut his legs off, right? You say, well, we wouldn't do that. I don't know. We've been pretty tough on great people throughout history. You know, Poison, Socrates, Imprison Galileo, Vern, Joan of Arc. We're more sophisticated today. We do it with lots of balls and chains, lots of government rules and regulations, lots of high tax rates. What people fail to realize is that great people make a disproportionate contribution to human well-being. Everybody in this room, your children, your grandchildren, have a better life thanks to Thomas Edison. Edison not only invented the light bulb, he invented the electrical generator, he invented the research laboratory itself. Put balls and chains on great people and reduce the quality of life for all of us. Egalitarians like to claim the moral high ground. And he that owns the moral high ground wins the fight. Conservatives often make a very bad mistake, and having been a business person, I get this mistake because I made it a lot. We think the arguments are over economics. We won the economics arguments back in 1776 when Adam Smith published Wealth of the Nation. We won those arguments a long time ago. The arguments are over ethics. And progressives like to claim the moral high ground because who can argue with everybody being equal? I don't think they have the moral high ground. What motivates progressives is the most destructive of all human emotions, and watch it in yourself. It's called envy. It's hatred of the good for being the good. You know, egalitarianism is a lot worse than I just described. Because here's the fact. Any human attribute, half the people are below average by definition. Half the people are below average in intelligence, in athletic ability, in artistic ability. The only way to make everybody equal is to go down literally to the lowest common denominator. I'll concretize that for you. I was raised in a church where the preacher wanted everybody to sing very loud except me. I am a really bad singer. It would be a tragedy if everybody had to sing as poorly as I sing. A lot of joy would go out of the world. And I would lose too, right? Now, when you confront, I get to debate progressives at Cato, left-wing people at Cato. It's always interesting. They'll always back away and say, oh, we don't really mean to go that far. So here's my question. How far do you mean to go? You're not going to cut Michael Jordan's legs off. How, three toes? Four toes? And here's the big question. Who decides how many toes? That's when the power lusters, the tyrants, show up. That's when Elizabeth Warren joins the party. Right? Because she knows exactly how many toes ought to be cut off on Michael Jordan. And then they'll back up again and say, well, I don't exactly mean that. What I mean is we want equal opportunity. Interestingly enough, equal opportunity is another oxymoron.